Hello, and welcome to Tea is Good, Books Are Better, the podcast where we drink tea and talk about books. I'm Raven.
I'm Jess.
Oh my god, that went perfectly.
Wow! I was waiting for you to tell me to do it again.
No, babe. New year, new us. Hello, it's 2024 and we are back.
We're still here.
Yeah, we still exist in your ear holes. Oh yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, so we took a little break for Christmas and New Year's, but we are fucking back, bitch. And with a new book, we're starting season 7.
Yep.
Can you believe we've had 6 seasons so far of Tigbab?
Honestly, no.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. We've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, actually, I think we've been doing this for 5 years, 6 years.
I think that's 6 years this year.
That's long.
That's over half a decade. What the fuck?
Well,
anyway, that's gonna make me
time flies, I guess.
Yeah, feel really old, so maybe maybe we move on for now. What are we drinking today before we launch into the new book, which you've already seen in the title of this episode?
I'm drinking cream of vanilla Earl Grey.
Oh my god. That sounds delicious.
Aw, yeah. I went all out.
What do you have in it?
It's honey and milk.
Mm-hmm. That's like good mm-hmm. shit. Mm-hmm. Guess yeah. what I have?
Do you have tea?
I have tea.
Wow!
I have the...
About dang time.
Decaf vanilla nut creme with oat milk and honey.
That yeah. sounds good.
It is good. I did put a little too much honey in it, so it's a little too sweet, but...
All right.
Still good. You'd think I would know how to make a cup of tea at this point.
I mean, you went a few weeks without. No, well, maybe you forgot.
I do drink tea every day. All right, shall we dive into it?
Aha! Uh-huh.
Our new novel for season 7... Is
what is it?
You can read it in the title of the episode.
Shadows.
Yes, so just said it is Shadow Scale by Rachel Hartman. And if you recognize that name, that's because this is the sequel to Serafina, which we've already read on this podcast.
Yeah. Yes, we did.
We decided to take a short break from the Song of Ice and Fire series, just because we only have one book left.
Yeah, and that's probably it. That's probably the end.
Yeah, and we might not get Winds of Winter, so...
Ever.
So I don't know, I don't want it to end yet, so...
Yeah, I get that.
We're postponing it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so this felt kind of appropriate to cover the sequel to Serafina, since we've already read Serafina. Mm-hmm. So, Shadow Scale, shall we start with a recap of Serafina?
Okay. So in the Kingdom of Gorid, teenager Serafina is a half-dragon court musician, and because these half-dragon hybrids are considered abominations, she has to hide her scales and her psychic connection to other hybrids. She also has access to her mother's memories, who was the dragon parent.
Yes, and her mother is deceased?
Dea, I think.
Okay.
Her uncle Orma, her mother's brother, a dragon scholar, has been involved in her life since infancy, I believe. The crown prince of Gorid, Rufus, is found decapitated in a way that suggests that he was murdered by dragons. He was murdered the day before the 40th anniversary of the signing of a treaty that ended the war between humans and dragons.
When I was reading the recap at the start of this book, like, it starts off sounding so, like, fantastical and jovial and, like, lighthearted, and then it gets to, Rufus was found decapitated.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa!
Right? Yeah. Dance is too violent.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Dragons can take human form, but they find human emotions baffling, which only leads to the continuing distrust and hatred between them and humans. Seraphina has a mental garden where she has access to communicate with 17 other hybrids.
Mm.
So Seraphina teams up with Prince Lucian Kiggs, the bastard son of Queen Lavonda, and fiancé to Princess Griselda, who she gives private music lessons to, in order to solve Rufus's murder. They have so much information in, like, one short sentence.
Yeah, damn.
Seraphina begins to suspect her dragon grandfather, Imlan, for murdering Rufus, and she thinks that he's in disguise as the human Joseph. But it turns out Imlan is in disguise as Lady Karungi, or Karungi.
Whoa! A whammon?
Who was one of the royal ladies in waiting.
Yeah. I think so. Mm. She was following around either Griselda or Queen Lavonda or someone.
Yeah, one of them.
Yeah.
And Imlan kidnaps Princess Griselda. Seraphina, together with the other hybrids, rescue the princess while her uncle and other dragons take down and kill Imlan. Seraphina later admits to Lucian and Griselda that she's half dragon, and while Griselda accepts her, Lucian has a harder time. In private, Seraphina admits her feelings for Lucian, and he admits the same, but they must wait to pursue anything further, as a war is about to begin. That was basically the last book.
Wow, what a great recap.
Thanks.
Good job.
Thank you.
I remember being genuinely surprised when Imlan was in disguise as Lady Karungi.
When you first read the book?
Yeah.
Yeah, same. I was expecting Joseph.
Yeah, he was sus as fuck.
He was. I didn't like him. Turns out he was just an unlikable person.
Yeah, he was just a shitty dude.
Major creep.
Yeah. Okay, well, I guess we're ready to jump in
to the prologue.
Hell yeah.
Oh.
Prologue.
Yes.
Here we go. Seraphina snaps back into herself. She is deep in the library of St. Ida's Music Conservatory, books piled around her, her uncle Orma standing over her. She is 11. So clearly this is a flashback. Oh. And Orma is teaching her meditation, but she'd never been so deep in her head before. Orma offers her water, but is overall neither warm nor impatient. Empathy is difficult for dragons. Orma's trying, man. Seraphina tells him that the meditation worked. She imagined a grove of fruit trees and pictured the little Porphyrian boy among them. She was able to induce a true vision of him, but when she touched him, she saw him in Porphyry. Porphyry? How do you think that said?
In what?
It's like a country. North of Gorid. Porphyry.
Oh, yeah, that's in chapter one.
Yeah.
Porphyry. Yeah, I was going to ask you how to pronounce that. Oh, shit.
Okay, well, it's either porphyry
Porphyry
or porph Poor Fyrie.
Poor Fyrie.
Okay, I'm gonna say Porphyry.
Porphyry. Yeah.
That sounded good.
Yeah.
Okay. She saw him in Porphyry playing and chasing a puppy. Orma asks if she got any headache or nausea. Did you get any headache? She did not, and she was able to exit the vision at will. Orma asks if she named the boy's symbolic representation in her head, the Avatar. She is embarrassed by the name she chose, Fruit Bat, even though Orma is incapable of laughing at her. Serafina admits, too, that she didn't name the rest yet. Orma then asks how she got her black eye, but he knows perfectly well that she was overtaken by a vision during yesterday's music lesson, fallen out of her chair, and slammed her face against the corner of his desk. He had told her at least she didn't smash her ood. I like Orma.
That's the instrument, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Immediately I'm like, that sounds like a cute a pet name for like private areas.
Oh my god.
Right. Like you would like talk to a child, right? At least didn't hit your ood.
Oh my god. Jessica, stop. What is an ood?
It's a guitar.
Yeah, kind of. It's a Middle Eastern short neck lute type pear shaped fretless stringed instrument. Usually with 11 strings. Damn.
Ooh.
Okay.
It's a bit.
Cool. Orma tells her it's only a matter of time before a vision fails her in the street and she is run over by a carriage. His point is that they have no time to waste. Serafina tells him she doesn't like inviting them all into her head at once. Some beings are quite horrifying, and she thinks it's awful they invade her mind without asking. Orma tells her that's not what's happening. Based on other strategies they've tried, he has concluded that they are not invading her mind, Serafina's mind is the one reaching out. The avatars she creates will be a real permanent connection to these beings, so her mind won't have to reach out anymore. If she wants to see them, she only needs to reach inwards. Serafina is overwhelmed and starts to tear up. Orma watches her, then tells her she is not helpless, she is... Then he ponders why helpful is not the antonym of helpless. He seems so genuinely befuddled that Serafina can't help but laugh. She asks how she should proceed. She doesn't know what kind of garden to build in her mind for all the grotesques. Orma thinks, then says there's something wrong with Serafina's religion. There is no proper creation myth. The saints basically appeared and kicked out the pagans. Then he asks if she knows the Porphyrian creation story, which she doesn't. He tells her it's short. The twin gods, necessity and chance, walked among the stars. What needed to be, was. What might be, sometimes was. She waits for him to continue, but that seems to be it. Orma says he likes that myth. It corresponds to the laws of nature, except for the gods. Serafina asks him if he's telling her to walk through her mind like a god. Orma tells her it's not blasphemy, it's a metaphor. Serafina still feels helpless, but Orma tells her she isn't. The garden will keep her safe. Serafina wishes she could believe him. Orma says it would probably help if she did. The human brain's capacity for belief produces interesting neurochemical effects. But Serafina ignores the lecture, positions herself, and descends into her other world. And that's the prologue.
Yep. We had a lot of her learning about her friends in her mind garden in the last book.
Mm-hmm. So I guess this prologue is kind of showing us how that mind garden even came to be.
Started?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How the fruit bat, her favorite one, has been there for a very long time. Mm-hmm. First one she trusted, I guess.
Yeah, I guess he didn't look as gross as some of the other ones. Some of them are, like, genuinely monsters, I think.
Yeah, for them to like really frighten her.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to add too that, and I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here, but I have been learning a little bit more about DID recently because I started following this YouTube channel that is run by a person who has DID.
Context DID. Did?
It's dissociative identity disorder.
Oh, okay.
Which used to be known as multiple personality disorder.
Yeah.
And this person kind of talked about like managing their system in their head, and it actually sounded a lot like this mind garden.
Like this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And, the first time they explained it, I immediately thought of Serafina's mind garden. I was like, oh.
That's kind of fascinating.
Yeah. So I wondered if maybe the writer was influenced by symptoms of DID. I'm not putting that on her at all.
Or at least the coping mechanisms for people with DID.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Mm. But just speculating.
That's cool.
Shall we move on to chapter one?
We're going to hear a lot about this place that I guess Fruit Bat is from that I did not pick up on.
Oh, Porphyry. Porphyry, yes. Good job.
All right. Chapter one.
Hell yeah.
We, Naselda and Serafina, are watching the night skies looking for the dragon Eskar, who is Orma's lady friend. Naselda spots her, and they try to direct her to land on the tower that they're on, since she's too large to land in the courtyard. She's a big girl. Yay. Eskar lands on the tower, and then changes to her human form. Naselda greets her, and Eskar tells her that she's not going to stay long. Serafina asks her how her uncle has been, and Eskar is like, he's fine. So they bring her inside, and they lead her to Glacelda's study, where Prince Lucian Kiggs is tending the fire and preparing tea. Lucian greets Eskar, but she ignores him. He then seats Glacelda, and Serafina watches him drooling, thinking that she's hardly seen him for the past 3 months. Serafina sits with them as she has been acting as an unofficial translator during Glacelda's meetings with the dragons, helping them communicate, because apparently like their cultures and customs are really offensive to each other.
So maybe more like an interpreter?
Perhaps.
Because they're speaking the same language.
Yeah. Just like having to turn every few seconds like, that wasn't meant as an offense.
Yeah. Real quick, are you going to cover what happened with Orma?
Nah, because I didn't.
Okay, so just for some context, Orma is on the run.
Yeah.
At this point, because... Fuck, I don't remember why. I fucking read it, too.
No, I did too.
God damn it. Why are we like this?
I know. I feel like he was injured a little bit because he fought Imlan. But he's done some healing, and I feel like he's in danger from Imlan's followers. For killing him?
Oh, maybe that's why.
But also Eskar killed Imlan. So I guess they're both in like in hiding or something. Are dragons called Ards in this?
I do think that is right.
See something about him needing a safe haven.
I think that he was probably declared a criminal along with the rest of Gored.
Because he kept Serafina a secret? Maybe that's considered offensive?
I don't think they know about Serafina yet, but I'm reading here that the generals were declaring Kamenot a criminal and demanding that Gored turn him over, but Queen Lavanda was incapacitated and Princess Dion was dead, so Princess Glizelda, in her first act as queen, decided that Gorid would not return Kaminot to face trumped-up charges, and that if necessary, Gorid would go to war for peace.
Ah.
So, they might have declared Orma a criminal at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's something like that. We can correct that if we come across it at some point.
Sure. Sure. Alright. Lucian asks Asghar if she's come with news about the war, and Asghar tells him no, and that she has no idea what's going on, that she's been with Orma this whole time instead, and she won't tell them where he is for his safety. Glizelda reminds her that they would never betray Orma, and Asghar apologizes and tells them that they've been at Porphyry. Glizelda asks Asghar why she won't fight with Kaminot, because she saw her fight Imlan, and Asghar was a badass.
Mm-hmm.
Asghar tells her that she will not be Kaminot's general, as she believes that war is illogical. It's a reactive stance, answering aggression with aggression. Serafina agrees, saying, "War begets war," which is a quote from one of Kiggs's favorite philosophers, which earns her a quick smile from him. Asghar elaborates that Kaminot has lost sight of their true goal, which is to end the war.
Should we clarify who Kaminot is?
I think he was a dragon.
Yes, he is the legal word? The legal Ardmagar of Dragonkind and co-founder of Kaminot's Treaty.
Ooh. Yes.
Oh yeah, it's known as Kaminot's Treaty.
I think. Like ambassador dragon?
Yes. I'm still trying to figure out what an Ardmagar is.
Does this book have like all the words in the back like the last one did?
Oh, maybe. Let's see. Oh, hell yeah. Ardmagar Kaminot, deposed leader of Dragonkind.
So like the king of dragons?
Okay, Ardmagar, title held by the leader of Dragonkind, translates roughly to supreme general.
Oh.
Okay, so he is the leader of Dragonkind, but it kind of seems like the dragons have turned against him.
Inner conflict.
Yes. I guess they were not impressed with what happened with Imlan.
No, they don't want dragons dying.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to. Asghar elaborates that Kaminot has lost sight of their true goal, which is to end the war. Kix asks if that isn't what the Ardmagar is trying to do, and Asghar tells him, no, he's trying to win.
Oh, shit.
Which is a good distinction. It's like,
She sees that right through him.
That is a human trait, Ardmagar.
Oh, shit.
He's been human too long.
Oh, no.
Asghar clarifies that since dragons rarely reproduce, that any death of one of their own is a significant loss. Dragons have since learned to solve their conflicts through litigation, which is the court of law, or one-on-one combat, not through war.
Oh.
Asghar wants Kaminot to return to their old office and argue his case. There are many dragons that haven't picked a side, but will if Kaminot just goes through the proper route.
Okay, I'm with her so far.
Asghar wants Kaminot to return with her to Porphyry. Porphyry has a community of exiled dragons who've chosen to live in human form over excision from the censors, which I think is what
the fuzz.
The fuzz, yeah.
The dragon fuzz.
I think they do something like cutting them off from ever being human again, or like erasing their memories or something.
Oh, yeah, I think that's it. They erase their memories.
So these guys are hiding from the censors by living in Porphyry.
Right. Mm. That's what was going to happen to Orma.
Yeah, they're going to wipe his brains. Oh, that's why he's there. Shit.
It all comes together.
He's one of these exiled dragons. Duh.
Yeah.
I'm slow.
Only sometimes.
Most of the time. These dragons could probably help Carmarnot safely travel through Porphyry if he pardons them as well. Eskar reaches in her pants and she gives Seraphina a letter from Orma. Seraphina immediately opens and reads it. Orma basically tells her that he's discovered that half dragons have the ability to link their minds together and that he's studying it. Did I miss something in this letter? I feel like I might have.
I feel like what he discovered was a little bit more complex than that.
I dumbed it down real good.
You might have dumbed it down a little too much, because we already know they can link minds because of Seraphina.
Oh, shit. Now that we...
Let's see.
Find the page. Well, here you go. Eskar will tell you where I am. You and I spoke of it often enough. I am pursuing the research I proposed. You will remember, I've been unexpectedly lucky, but I cannot put my findings here. I only risk writing you, despite Eskar's admonitions, because I have learned something potentially useful to your queen. I have reason to think that you and other half-dragons can thread your minds together like beads on a string. It has been described. In so doing, you will find you can make a barrier in the, let's say, air?
Yes.
An unseen wall strong enough to stop a dragon mid-flight.
Ooh, so hey. That's the interesting part.
Oh, yeah.
Build a fucking wall in the air? Huh?
Like a bird against a window, according to my source, who has more flair for description than I. You will be astonished to learn who it is. Is it Fruit Bat? The process will require practice. The more it Yasari. What?
Oh, it Yasari?
Who is that?
That is half dragons.
Ah, the more it Yasari on your strength, the stronger the barrier. The uses should be obvious. I urge haste in funding your fellows before the war comes south. Unless you give up prematurely, your search will bring you here. Olinard. Oh.
That seems so random, to be honest.
It kind of does.
You can build a wall in the air.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Perfect. We're fighting dragons.
Yeah.
A little bit too perfect.
A little too convenient.
While Seraphina reads her letter, Eskar excuses herself for sleeps. And when Seraphina looks up, Riggs is watching her.
Yeah, he is.
Griselda wonders what Commonaut will think of Eskar's plan. When she notices the tension between Kiggs and Seraphina, she asks what's up. Seraphina gives the letter to Griselda, and she and Kiggs read it together. Kiggs asks Seraphina what Orma is researching, and she tells him that he's been looking up historical records of half-dragons. Apparently, the Porphyrians have been rumored to be more open to the idea of dragon-human crossbreeding. Oh. Seraphina wants to search for the remaining half-dragons. Now.
Sounds like someone's going on a mission. Going on an adventure.
Griselda is sad at losing her music teacher, since it's one of the few times she can be herself rather than the queen. But she knows she's gotta be dutiful. So Seraphina leaves shortly after with her letter, excited to find the other half dragons and build this sky wall, I guess.
It's a sky wall. It won't tumble.
Oh, yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, it's that.
That's it?
No, that's my chapter.
These are short chapters compared to A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of shocked. I was like, whoa, is this all? And I was like skimming through it. I'm used to reading like so much and just dying.
Taking literally hours to summarize.
Yeah, days. Days!
Ah. Well, we're in it now. I think we can kind of see where this is going.
Yeah, time to find the other dragons. I want to find that one that lives in like the swamp cabin that she's locked away in there.
Oh yeah,
I kind of remember that. I want to know who that is.
Right.
Is when she talked about the scary ones. That's the scary one that I only remember.
Yeah.
The one that's locked in the cabin.
That might have been mentioned in the prologue. Let me Google it real quick. And by Google it, I mean flip through my book. I can't believe I just said Google it. I think in the prologue when she's asking Orma how to proceed with the garden, she says, that dread swamp slug can loll in mud, I suppose.
Okay.
Is that what you're thinking of?
Thanks, look. So I think I remember a slug in the first book.
Oh right, it was like living in the river.
Like didn't really scare her as much, but there was a frightening one that was in a cabin. You remember? Like one that she completely dreaded going near.
Right. Ooh, I'm excited for her to meet that one.
Yeah, I want to know who this is. Imagine it's like the smallest, cutest one of them all.
Because this one like did something to her mind, right? Mm-hmm. So she had to lock them away.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, yeah. That's coming back to me now.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming back to me now.
It reached back out when she felt Seraphina, when it felt Seraphina.
Say that again?
I think they reversed it, like when Seraphina was reaching out finding other half dragons, this one felt her and then went right into Seraphina's mind.
Right.
Weird the poo-poo out of her.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think that's what happened.
She squeaked out a little fart of fear.
Mm-hmm. And then locked her away. I'm not sure the gender.
I feel like it was a girl, if I'm remembering.
Yeah,
correctly.
For some reason my brain keeps telling me it's female, but I can't be sure.
Yeah, I mean, same. All right, well, that's exciting.
Yeah,
got a sky wall? Hell yeah.
Yeah, a really big one, apparently. The more half dragons join forces.
It does sound like kind of stupidly convenient.
It does.
But I trust Rachel Hartman to like make it interesting.
Okay.
So we'll see how it goes.
Hopefully it works.
Yeah, I'm excited to dip our toes into something outside of A Song of Ice and Fire for a little bit.
Yeah. Spicing things up a little.
Yeah. We need some spice. Well, welcome back and welcome to season 7, and we hope you enjoy Shadowscale. Thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah.
A Song of Ice and Fire will be back soon, don't worry.
Yep.
Alright. If you want more of the podcast, you can connect with us on Instagram. You can follow our podcast, TigBab Podcast, or choose to follow us individually. My username is Krumby, and Jess goes by Jess.Egan24. Additionally, find us on Facebook by searching for TigBab Podcast or Tea is Good, Books Are Better. Also, don't forget to explore the music of our talented friend, Barum, on Spotify. He created the catchy jingle you heard at the beginning of the episode and produces amazing ambient tunes. Perfect for reading, actually. So it's Barambient on Spotify, and that's spelled Barambient. Lastly, consider checking out our Patreon page at patreon.com/teaisgoodbooksarebetter, We offer a $5 tier where you can listen to us force our brother to watch Game of Thrones, or enjoy outtakes and access other behind-the-scenes content. Most importantly, sharing our podcast with your family and friends would mean the world to us and greatly contribute to our podcast's growth. Thank you so much for being a listener. And next time, more Serafina. I guess I can't announce who the new
I guess chapter 2, 3, and 4.
Because I was instinctively going to say who the next perspective character was, and I was like, oh yeah, it's just Serafina.
Kept getting thrown off guard with all the I in me.
Oh yeah, reading something in first person.
Yeah. Wait, whoa.
Me? What a trip. Oh yeah. It is a very different vibe.
It is. I don't think I like it anymore. I like being the third person.
There's so many things that you can do in first person that you can't do in third, and also the other way around. So I feel like third person makes a lot more sense for something like A Song of Ice and Fire, because there's so many different perspective characters that the narrator needs to be sort of omniscient.
Yeah.
But for something like Serafina, where like a lot of it is in her mind.
That's true.
It feels super appropriate to be in first person.
Yeah. Yeah, that mind garden thing.
Yeah. But it's cool to shake it up a bit.
It is different.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you in the next episode. Ta-ta!
Yeah.